Now, types of investing. Let's look first at CDs, money market type accounts. A CD is a certificate of deposit, typically at the bank. Now, I hear people walk around talking like they're somebody, they're some big investor. I've got me a CD. I've got CDs, I'm doing CDs. This means nothing. When you ever go to school and have perfect attendance, they gave you a certificate. That's what this is. It's a certificate that says you have a deposit. Whoopee. Okay? You have a savings account with a frameable certificate. That's it. That's all a certificate of deposit is. Now, that's not what a real one looks like. A real one would look more like a piece of paper from a bank, right? That's an actual certificate of deposit there. And these days, most of them are done electronically. You may not even get a piece of paper. You just have a web presence. It's a savings account that if you take your money out early, they charge you a... I don't own any CDs, not one. I'm not going to tie my money up and not get paid anything for tying it up. And that's what we end up doing with this. So I don't do that. Instead, I use money market accounts with a mutual fund company, money market mutual funds. They're low-risk money market accounts with check writing privileges. So for my emergency fund, I'm making the same money you'd be making on a CD, about the same interest rate as you'd make on a six-month CD in a money market account, and I can write checks against it. There's no penalty, and it's just sitting there. It's not an investment, though. Even then, it's a savings account. Because we said with the emergency fund, it's not an investment, it's insurance. You remember saying that in the lesson? Okay? Not an investment, insurance. So that's not really an investment even then, but it's a place to park money short term. So if I'm saving money for a short period of time, then that's where what I'll use. But again, I don't qualify that as an investment. That's a savings account. So I don't use CDs for anything. They just don't have, if you want to park some money for 6 months and you feel a little bit better at being in a bank than being in a money market mutual fund, that's fine, but you're not really making anything. And don't talk to me about tenths of a point. Ooh, I'm 2/10 of a point ahead of you. Whoopee. That really will not matter over the scope of time. It's more about your behavior than stuff like that that causes you to win. Single stocks. Single stock investing carries an extremely high degree of risk. I do not own a single stock. If you're a single stock nut, or you just think your company is the best company since sliced bread and you want to buy some single stocks, you've just got to have some single stocks. You think they're the greatest thing out there and you and your golfing buddy have got this figured out and you just got to do it. Well, no more than 10% of your nest egg. So if you have $300,000 in your 401k, you should never have more than $30,000 tied up in single stocks. And I got to tell you one more time, I know a lot about this. I've spent my life studying it. I have zero money in single stocks. I don't think it's fun. It's too risky. And you jump in and out, and there's all kinds of studies that say that the average person buying and selling stocks through their broker over a period of years averages about 7%. You and your golfing buddy do not have this thing figured out. And so it's a bad idea. Mark Twain, he said it this way. He said, October, this is one of the peculiarly dangerous months to speculate in stocks. The others are July, January, September, April, November, May, March, June, December, August, and February. This is how it works. Now, when you buy a stock, we do need to understand how this works. You're actually buying a piece of ownership in the company. You're buying a piece of ownership in the company. Let's do this way for just a second. I'm going to open a company, and I'll tell you what, let's you and I open a company. What's your first name, sir?
Dwayne.
It's good to meet you. Thank you, sir. Dwayne and I, as an example, are going to open a printing company. We're going to go in the printing business together. Okay? Dwayne knows a lot about printing. I don't know anything about it in our example. Are you in the printing business? Good. Okay, this is an example, all right? And so he's going to come to me. I'm going to put up a little money, and he's going to go in and do the work and get the accounts and get, you know, learn about the paper and the ink and that kind of stuff. And so we decide we're going to form a corporation, and we're going to own it half and half, and we're going to issue 100 shares of stock, a share of stock. And he's going to have 50 shares of stock, and I'm going to have 50 shares of stock. So we're 50-50 owners in this company. A share of stock represents a piece of ownership in that company. Dwayne and Dave's, the D&D print shop, right? Okay? And so then what happens to this company what happens to its value and its profitability as a stockholder and owner of the company, I get to participate in a winner, in winning or losing with that. If I sold a share of this stock to someone else, then as we made money or lost money, then that person would benefit. Now, how does that happen? Well, if you're an owner, think about it. If you owned your own print business, forget stock a second. If you owned a company, if the company did better, you'd be doing better, right? In a couple of different ways. Your return comes as the value, as the company increases in value. Now, let's say we go along and we have one little print shop and we're winning and Dwayne's really good at this and he goes out and gets a bunch of accounts and I maybe do the accounting or the financial stuff over here and he's an excellent printer and we build up business and build up business so much so we can't fit it in that and we open up another building and pretty soon you visit us 5-10 years later and we've got print shops in 6 different cities. Now, is this one share of stock, my 50 shares of stock, worth more with print shops in 6 or 8 cities that are profitable, and I've got all that equipment? Yeah. And so that's what happens. That's how a share of stock goes up in value. If you buy a share of a company like a Home Depot or something, and it goes from $52 a share to $72 a share, it's because the company became worth more, just like our print shop. And you're a little bitty dinky sliver of an owner when you own a share of stock in a publicly traded company. Same kind of thing. Or you, the owner, can make some of the profits out. And we have D&D Print Shop, and maybe we make some money. Hey, there's an idea. And Dwayne and Dave's Print Shop. And maybe we made $40,000 that year. Well, if we're going to take that money out, that would be called dividends. And so if you own a share of a publicly traded company and they make a profit, they may choose to issue dividends. And so you may get a check that's your little sliver of the profits for that year of that company. That's what stock ownership is. So you make money as the value of the company goes up or as it makes profits and pays out dividends. Some companies are big dividend-paying companies. My grandfather, for instance, when he was alive, worked many, many years, 38 years at Alcoa Aluminum. And when my grandmother was alive, after my grandfather passed away, she would go, she knew which Tuesday of the month or which day of the month the dividend check was coming. He had some Alcoa stock and they were making a profit and she could go to the mailbox and there'd be a check. She didn't even really know what it was. She just knew dividends meant money. She didn't understand exactly how it all worked, but she cashed those checks, I'll tell you that. And so she was making a little, as Alcoa Aluminum made money in those days, she participated. He participated in the profits by getting dividends checks. Now, bonds are a debt instrument by which the company owes you money. Now again, let's go back to Dwayne and Dave's print shop. Now you know that if Dwayne and Dave at D&D print shop, if I'm involved, we're not borrowing money, but we got to do this as an example, okay? Let's say that we wanted to borrow $10,000. If we were a publicly traded company, we could issue a bond. And what's your first name, sir?
Stan.
Stan, it's good to meet you, sir. Let's say Stan, he really kind of liked what we were doing over there at the print company. It looked pretty good to him. He knew we weren't really going to cut him in as an owner, but he trusted us to be able to pay the bill. And so we issue a bond for $10,000 to Stan, and he gives me $10,000. Come on, Stan. Come on, baby. Okay? And he gives us $10,000. Now, we owe him a debt of $10,000. Does that make sense? That's what a bond is. It's a debt instrument. If it's a government bond, the government owes you a debt if you own a government bond. That's what it is. A bond is a debt instrument. Now, the way you make money on bonds is there's an interest rate involved. Stan wouldn't have given us that money if we weren't going to pay him interest, right? So we're going to pay him interest on it. Now let's say, just for simplification, that we were paying 10% on our bonds. And if we pay 10%, then Stan's going to make 10% on this. And at some point, this has a due date. We have to give him the whole $10,000 back. But in the meantime, every year we're sending him 10% on this $10,000 bond. And that's all it is. So your return comes on a bond. And again, you get a little certificate thing like that. Your return comes as the fluctuation in price and the interest rate is paid. So bonds go up and down in price, and few individuals do well with single bond purchases. Now, let me take this just a little bit further and walk over into the very edge of sophistication. I can't even say it, see? And so let's say that we have a 10% bond, that I'm paying him 10% in the open market in the stock market, right? Stocks and bonds. You've heard about this. Okay, I'm paying him 10%. Let's say that the interest rates around the world are starting to average 12%. But his bond only entitles him to 10%. Is his bond worth a little less or a little more if everybody else is getting 12 and he's only getting 10? He's worth less. So as interest rates rise, bond prices fall. There's an inverse relationship. So if your grandmother has a whole bunch of government bonds that she's purchased thinking they're safe and interest rates are going up, she's starting to lose value in those and can do so pretty quickly if interest rates shift quickly. And so I don't like bonds, not because of that. They're just as risky as stocks. They jump around all over the place. They're a little safer than stocks, but the bond market throughout its lifetime has only averaged about 8%. So I don't own a single bond. I don't want to make 8% on that. I might end up making a mess like I'm doing right now. That could happen. So again, few individuals do well with single bond purchases. Now,